before we begin teachings, let's reflect on our motivation. And let's look at our lives from a large perspective that goes beyond simply our temporal happiness at this moment. And let's consider ourselves as beings caught in cyclic existence under the control of ignorance, mental afflictions, and karma. And wanting ourselves to have lasting happiness and actual freedom, let's develop the aspiration to attain liberation, to be free of the ignorance, afflictions, and karma that keep us bound in a cycle of misery. And then recalling that it's not only us who are in this situation, but every other living being, and that we are interrelated, interconnected with each and every other living being. And let's expand our motivation so it has space for everybody. And aspire to attain full enlightenment so that we can be of the greatest benefit to all living beings. So contemplate and generate that motivation. So this process of enlarging our motivation is really a very important one. And we can see that it takes some energy to do it, doesn't it? It doesn't come natural to us. Because most of the time, what are we thinking about? Ourselves. Okay, and how we can have pleasure ASAP. Okay, so that's what's going on in our minds most of the time. Okay, and when we do look at other people, they seem very real and concrete to us. You know, we think we know who everybody is. Our opinion factory is very good at spewing out. It works overtime, effortlessly, to spew out incredible amount of opinions about other people. And so we think we know who everybody is. You know, even strangers who we just see. We look at their face, maybe look at their clothing, look at their body language, and then whoop, you know, we know what this person is all about. And how are you going to relate to them? Haven't spoken a word, but that doesn't matter. Then even if we get to know somebody, yeah, we get to know their habits, you live with them for a while, you know their habits, then we start to think, oh, I know exactly who that person is. And they appear like a real person. Here they are, they're in this kind of, you know, body, and this and this and this and this, and we know all these things about them, and that's what they are. We think. But is it? You know, do we really know very much about that person? I mean, to really know who somebody is, you have to be them. But do we even understand ourselves and know who we are? Forget it. You know, we don't understand ourselves. Do we know why we go to sleep? And I'm not talking about some scientific explanation. that you read in, you know, New York Times science section or in a science book. You know, do we understand why we go to sleep? Do we understand why we wake up? Do we understand, you know, what we are? Why this life happens? What the, you know, why we're in this body? Do we understand our emotions and our thoughts? I mean, we don't understand ourselves very well, do we? And yet we look at other people, we think we know all about them. Okay. So somehow we've missed, we're off mark. Okay. And then even the way we look at people, when we think of ourselves, I, it feels like there's this thing that's me. And we never question it, I'm me. And this is who I am. I'm, you know, this gender and this race and this religion and this sexual orientation, this socioeconomic background, this ethnic group, this career. I'm a person who likes this kind of hobbies. I like this kind of movies. You know, I'm nearsighted or farsighted. I'm, you know, whatever it is. And we have all these identities and we think that's what we are. Like that's, there's this person there who is all those things, but is that really true? How did we get to be all those things? If we think we're all those things, how did we get to be them? Yeah. So when we start to, you know, investigating a little bit deeper, scratching the surface of all of our assumptions and opinions, we see that we you know, we don't know very much. And some of our ideas, believe it or not, could even be wrong. Mm. Now, I know that's very presumptuous. But actually, I remember Jeffrey Hopkins was talking about how, you know, the joy of being wrong. You know, how wrong we are and how good it is that we're wrong, because if we were right, then boy, we're really stuck. You know, I mean, think about it. If we're right all the time, then how are we ever going to get any better? Then we're just, you know, we're stuck where we are. So there's kind of some advantages to being wrong. You know, but we think that we're this concrete person. We look at other people, they look like concrete people. But, you know, are we a concrete person? Are they concrete people? No, if we were, how can we change and we age and, you know, get old and die? And you know, so there's all these things to really think about. And in the process of it, you know, makes us investigate what our life is about much more deeply instead of just making general assumptions that we know what's going on. So I think this kind of questioning is quite important, and in the process of investigating like this, we may come, believe it or not, to actually know something, to understand something. Okay. So last week we talked about meditation, and then we talked a little bit about the Buddhist approach and how the Buddha recommended to us that we always investigate and that we keep that alert, questioning, curious mind very prominent, that we don't just believe things because some authority said them, or because they're written in scriptures, or because they seem logical when you deal with dubious kind of logic, or because that's tradition or custom or habit, or because that makes sense to our ego. Yeah, it's comfortable to our ego. None of those are very good reasons for believing anything, and yet they're often the reasons that we use. So the Buddha really encouraged us to think clearly and to investigate and to try something out and test it through our own experience. Because when we experience something for ourselves, then we really know that it's true. So especially in the case of learning the Buddha's teachings, we listen and we try and get an understanding of them and see if the path that the Buddha's talking about makes sense. So we want to practice something that makes sense, that seems to be going in a good direction. And but then the intellectual understanding is not sufficient. We have to really contemplate and put it into practice. And so that's the next step of doing that, and trying to practice the things that we're learning and see if they actually work to transform our mind. So today's topic is taking the ache out of attachment. And there's a lot to practice in this topic to see if it works. Okay, and this topic is a real button pusher. Yeah? Because it starts out just by, before we can even talk about attachment per se, we have to look at where our happiness and suffering comes from, and also where we think it comes from. Because in our usual life, the way we usually speak, it seems as if happiness and suffering come from outside of us, doesn't it? I'm so happy because somebody gave me a present. I'm so happy because I got a promotion. I'm happy because somebody said I look good. I'm happy because I have chocolate cake. I'm happy because I see something beautiful. I'm happy because there's some good food, or there's some beautiful things to look at, or I'm lying down on a comfortable bed, or I get to see nice movies and listen to good music. So it seems as if happiness comes from outside of us, And so we're always trying to get our lives, arrange our lives, so that we're near the people and things that we think are what provide us with happiness. Okay? So this is just a basic assumption, that we've probably never questioned in our life. That happiness comes from having the things that we want, being near the people we care about, being in the place that we like. This is just what we assume. And so then the purpose of our life becomes controlling the external world so that we can always be in the kind of environment with the things and people and situations that give us happiness. And so wouldn't you say that from morning to night that's basically what you're doing, is trying to rearrange your environment so that you have everything you like? Yeah, that's basically what we do all day. And then it also appears to us as if our suffering comes from outside. So when we talk to people, and I'm unhappy, we're unhappy. Why are we unhappy? Well, it's mostly other people's fault, isn't it? Yeah, my husband or wife did this or that. My parents did this and that. My kids did this and that. My colleagues did, they betrayed me. My neighbors left their garbage on my lawn. My kid's teacher didn't pass him in his exam. The government's all screwed up, and they're drilling in Alaska, and they're dropping bombs in Iraq, and the price of gas is so high. And so it seems like all of our suffering comes from outside. And so again, in order to be free from suffering, we have the same strategy. Let's just change the environment, and get rid of everyone and everything that we don't like. Okay, so as soon as we don't like something, well, get rid of it. And as soon as we don't like somebody, kick them out. Get rid of them. Okay? So it would be an interesting experiment. You start out with the whole world in your kind of mental room, and every time somebody does something you don't like, you kick them out. And then after a while, who's going to be in your mental room? Yeah, it gets pretty lonely, doesn't it? Every time somebody bugs us, we kick them out. Yeah, no second chances. So, you see, our basic life is arranged around getting rid of or destroying everything we don't like, because it seems like our unhappiness is due to that. And, conversely, getting everything we do like, bringing it all in. Okay? And so that's what we do most of the day. Yeah, something is displeasing, I'm getting away from it. Something is pleasing, I'm going towards it. And that becomes the meaning and purpose of our life. Okay, this wouldn't be, you know, a problem, except for a few minor details. One is, have you ever succeeded in arranging the environment so it's the way you want it to be? You ever succeeded in getting everything you want and getting rid of everything you don't like? Yeah? You ever succeeded? Yeah. Sometimes when you first fall in love, it feels like, oh, now. Okay? But how long does that last? You know? Until he doesn't do his dishes. So not very long. Yeah, because the true character comes out quickly. Yeah. So, you know, one of the difficulties with this vision of happiness and suffering coming from outside is that we've never attained it, no matter how hard we've worked. And do we know anybody else who's attained it? Anybody else who has a 100% happy life with no complaints about anything? Do you know anybody like that? Yeah. We might think that somebody rich and famous lives like that. Well, all you do is wait 6 months. You know, you keep reading the tabloids and you wait 6 months and you find out a person that you thought, you know, must be everlastingly happy is now a drug addict and getting a divorce. And, you know, I mean, be careful who we're jealous of, because sometimes their lives are not very good. Yeah? So, okay, the difficulty with this vision is that it's impossible to attain. And we don't know anybody who's ever done it. Okay? Second difficulty with this vision is even if you could get everything around you that you like and get rid of everything you don't like, you still get old and sick and die. Yeah, that still happens. That, you know, we're not able to reverse. So that's still a given. Okay. Then, in the process of trying to get everything we want and get rid of everything we don't want, sometimes we create more suffering for ourselves than others, don't we? Yeah? Think of how hard you have to work to get what you want, and how sometimes it's so miserable doing what you need to get what you want. Yeah? And then you try and get rid of the things you don't like, and that becomes a real drag. Because sometimes, you know, to do that, we say nasty things or we harm somebody else, and then we feel pretty lousy about ourselves afterwards. Okay? So this worldview that, you know, happiness and suffering comes from outside, it really doesn't work. On a practical level, it doesn't work. Okay? Now, also, is it realistic? Yeah, do things really work that way, that happiness and suffering come from outside? Is that vision according to reality? Have you ever been in a gorgeous place with people you care about and been totally miserable? I have. Have you? Yeah? Can you think of instances in your life where, you know, it sounds like the thing that they talk about in the love songs or the songs or the movies, and you're in that situation and you're miserable? Yeah? Okay? Because one small thing is wrong. One small thing in the whole thing, you know? Yeah? So, you know, it's not a very realistic vision, and in the process of trying to get it, we create a lot of negativity. What the Buddha said was, question that vision. Question the vision that happiness and suffering come from outside. Yeah. Really look deeply into your own experience and see if that is actually a correct, realistic vision. Okay, so one thing that I think helps in starting that investigation is an experience that we've all had, which is waking up in the morning in a bad mood. Anybody who has not had that experience? Yeah, I think that's kind of a universal one. Some people have it more than others. But you wake up and you just feel crummy. You're in a bad mood. Okay. Now what happens that day that you're in a bad mood? Does anything go right that day? No. Everything goes wrong. And just in that day when you're in a bad mood, and you could really, you know, use a hand and really use somebody to say something nice to you. Everybody seems so rude, so self-centered, so blaming. True, isn't it? Yeah. Even somebody comes up and says, good morning. You go, why are they talking to me in that tone of voice? They must want something from me. Yeah? When we're in a bad mood, nobody can do anything right. What do you think? True or not true? I think I first learned that as a kid watching my parents. You know? When mom and dad's in a bad mood, anything you do as a kid is wrong. At least that was my experience. So better not do anything. But that's still doing something. And then lo and behold, I found out that I was like my parents. You know, that when I'm in a bad mood, anything everybody does is wrong, it's bad, it's insufficient, it's inconsiderate. There's something for me to pick on. So that's telling us something. Yeah, whenever we're in a bad mood, we're miserable, everything around us looks miserable. Is that actually true? Or is that the creation of our bad mood? When we're in a good mood, yeah, we just got something that we really like, then everything looks really good. And we often whitewash red flags. Have you ever noticed that? Yeah? And we're so blinded by, oh, I feel so good, I got my chocolate cake, that, you know, in another situation, there's a big red flag, and we say, oh, what a beautiful flag. Yeah? And we keep going right into a ditch. So, our mind paints things. It creates things to be what we want them to be at a certain time. So this vision of happiness and suffering coming from outside really isn't very realistic. what the Buddha's teachings are all about is changing what's going on in our own mind, our own heart. Because we begin to see as we watch our lives that whenever there's anger in our mind, we're unhappy. Whenever there's discontent in our mind, everything everybody does is wrong. We begin to see that we're creating our own unhappiness. And conversely, if we're able to free ourselves from the anger, the complaining mind, the discontent, the judgment that we have of other people, then it might have, you know, we might have a way to actually be happy. Mm-hmm. And so the Buddha taught a method on how to identify what mental factors are conducive for happiness and what mental factors bring misery. And then he taught how to increase the ones that bring happiness, how to decrease the ones that bring misery. So one of the main ones that he pointed out as bringing misery is a mental factor of attachment. So this also includes clinging, craving, desiring sense objects. Okay, it's what you could call the bubblegum mind. Yeah. What's the chief attribute of bubblegum? It sticks. Okay. What's the second chief attribute of bubblegum? You get a big bubble and it pops and it's in your face. Okay. Well, this is exactly how attachment operates. Because what is attachment? It's a mind that is based on exaggerating the good qualities of someone or something. That's blowing the bubble. Okay? We've exaggerated these good qualities. This person is like wonderful. This job is the best thing. You know, the new roof is stupendous. I can visualize, can't I? Okay, you gotta go look at our new roof. And pray that it rains everywhere except on the new roof. Okay, but, okay, so, you know, we exaggerate the good qualities of someone or something, and we blow that bubble, and we think, wow, yeah, and we feel happy inside. This is sometimes what makes it difficult to see that attachment and craving are problemsome, is because at the beginning, we feel very happy when we get what we want. Yeah. Ooh, you know, we get this kind of giddy feeling. You know the feeling I'm talking about? That we've had since we were 3 years old and we keep having, you know, no matter how old we are. You know, some little thing is like, ooh, you know, like it's going to be our birthday. Except when you're older and it changes. So we're blowing this bubble of this wonderful thing. Yeah? And if we look back in our life, you know, it's a very interesting research project. Look back in our life at everything we thought was so stupendous and so wonderful. And what happened to it? What happened to it? Okay. So, you know, we can start with our, you know, our tricycle when we were 3 years old, or our bicycle with training wheels. Do you remember that? How exciting it was to get a bike with training wheels. And, you know, how long did that happiness last? Yeah, until we fell off. Yeah? Or until we graduated to a bike. Or until the neighbor across the street got a prettier bike with training wheels. Okay. And we look at everything in our life that we thought was like stupendous, you know? A good meal, or a good this, a good that, you know? And nothing lasts forever. Even if it brings some temporary happiness, none of it lasts forever. Okay? And sometimes, like I was saying, in the process of getting it, it's really a lot of work. And you can have a lot of problems getting it. And then at the end, we're always kind of left feeling a little bit out of sorts, a little bit disappointed, aren't we? We had this wonderful thing, lasted for a while. We thought it was going to last forever, but it didn't. Yeah? And then at the end, we're just kind of sitting there going, well, now what? It's a very good research project in our life, you know? So to really look inside about that. And look inside about the short happinesses, you know? The happiness that, you know, is a piece of cake or a good meal or, you know, a good time with friends. And look at the longer happinesses, a relationship or a job or, you know, whatever. Okay? And we see that... we blew a big bubble, and we thought the bubble was going to last forever. But what happened? It went away. And what do we have remaining? That bubble got all over our face. Okay. And then we go out and we look for the next thing that's going to bring us happiness. And so this is, you know, what American culture is all about. We are taught to consume. In fact, we are taught to be dissatisfied and to be craving something new and better all the time. You know? It's kind of like we have a junky mind. We're looking for the next hit of happiness. And the shopping center is supposed to give it to us. Isn't it? You know? Where do we take refuge in America? The shopping center. Yeah? Shopping center, the refrigerator. Yeah? That's the, you know, when you're lazy and don't want to drive to the shopping center, you go to the refrigerator first. Then you go to the shopping center and get more stuff to fill up the refrigerator. Yeah? We take refuge in our car, take refuge in alcohol and drugs, we take refuge in internet and computers, television. Yeah. We find it totally distasteful to be friends with ourselves. Yeah. But what's the first thing you do when you get in the car after you turn on the ignition? Turn on the radio. I bet you turn on the radio before you put your seatbelt on. Why do we turn on the radio? Because it's going to make us happy. Yeah, we're going to hear something that's nice, that's interesting, that's pleasant, that's entertaining. We can't stand to be alone and just be peaceful and happy with ourselves. We've got to have something outside. Yeah. Or you get home from work and you walk in. If you're the first person in the house, what do? Turn on the TV. Yeah? So you get some entertainment. You turn on the TV, head for the refrigerator, go back to the TV with something in your hand. Okay? So, you know, we're taught to have all this kind of unsatisfied desire that leads us to go out and get the next hit, the next big thing that is going to fill up the empty hole inside. And so we run here and there trying to fill up the empty hole. Yeah. The empty hole inside here. Okay. It usually makes an empty hole in our wallet, and then you get into credit card debt and then you have more problems. Yeah? Isn't that incredible, you know? I mean, people are just in so much credit card debt and have very little to show for it. Okay? But the hole's still there, and we keep on trying to fill it up. So attachment doesn't work as a strategy to fill up the hole inside. Yeah? Because not having external things is not the problem. Yeah? The reason that we're unhappy is not because we lack the latest widget. The reason we're unhappy is because we have the mind of craving and desire. Okay? But as soon as we have that mind of craving and attachment, its nature is, you know, look for something to glom onto, to stick to. That's the bubblegum mind. Okay? So we keep on doing the same thing again and again and again and again, trying to be happy, not getting the happiness we want, thinking that it's still the project, the problem of the object or the person. Okay? I just didn't buy the right whatever it was. You know, I didn't marry the right whoever it was. Okay? So got to get a new one. So, but the real source is in here. Okay, the real source is in here. So you might be saying, well, you know, she's just painting this dismal view of life, that all the things that I thought were going to make me happy aren't going to make me happy. You know, what a pessimistic view of life. Can't go to the movies anymore. Can't go out drinking and drugging. Can't go to the shopping center. I mean, I didn't say don't do all those things. Yeah? I just said look at your mind when you do them. And we think, oh, Buddhism's so pessimistic. There are no happiness anywhere. And then you go to like one of His Holiness the Dalai Lama's public talks. Yeah. And here's His Holiness. You know, he's been a refugee. I mean, we haven't been refugees. I don't think any of us have been. Maybe a few. Okay? Yeah, he's been a refugee since he was 24 years old. Yeah, he's celibate. Can you imagine? My goodness. What did the rappers say about that? Yeah. He doesn't have a lot of money. He gets up at 3:30 in the morning, goes to bed at 8:30 at night, doesn't eat in the evening, yeah, doesn't watch movies, doesn't go lying on the beach. And you go to one of his talks, and he walks in the room, and here's this human being who is so happy. Right or wrong? Many of you have been to His Holiness's events. What's your impression? Does he walk into the room like, oh God? He's not like that. I mean, here's this human being who's completely happy. And he doesn't do any of the things that, you know, American culture tells us we need to do in order to be happy. Yeah. In fact, he even looks happier than we do. And he's not even in credit card debt. Yeah? And we're sitting there scratching our head, you know, how can this possibly be? You know, how can you be happy without having all these things? Yeah. Well, that's because the happiness comes from inside, comes from transforming what's going on inside of us. Yeah? The more we let go of the attachment, yeah, the more, and the anger and the dissatisfaction, then the more happy we are. That's not very good grammar. The happier we are. Mm-hmm. Okay? So, and we can see that from our own experience. Sometimes we can, you know, when we really look inside, we can see that it's not, what's causing our misery isn't that we don't have something. What's causing our misery is that we're craving having it. Because as soon as we can get rid of the craving, then the mind's peaceful. Yeah? So it's not whether we have it or not, it's whether we're craving it or not. It's that craving that makes us quite miserable. Okay.